sir.
Well, my name's Tarek. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tarek.
When you stick around for a while and start sponsoring people and observe the type of people that sit across the table from you, you'll find there's three or four different types. You'll get guys that come to you and they believe God exists. They believe in God. And everything they believe about God is the truth. And they're very difficult to work with. Then you get the guys that know everything. There's nothing they know that's not worth knowing. And they're also very difficult to work with. And then you get the acceptors. They accept everything. And they're very difficult to work with. And then every once in a while, you get an individual that's pretty mangled, and he's ready to commence solving his problem. And that individual usually has a very open mind, and the path of consideration is very important, and they're willing to consider many things. And that's what this cat is. He's my kind of cat. I really have enjoyed spending time with Drew, and he takes rigorous honesty and willingness to another level, because I don't know if you guys know this, but he drives from Athens to attend meetings and do step work on a regular basis. I know people that won't even drive 5 minutes to do step work or go to a meeting. And he's followed all the clear-cut directions the Big Book gives us. And he's had a powerful experience. And he's going to share it with you. And with that, I give you Drew.
I'm real nervous. My name's Drew. God separated me from all my indulging substances, including alcohol, May 26, 2012. With the help of Sergeant Strange of the Morgan County Police Department. I partied and got wasted for a long, long time. You know, I started getting drunk and high on drugs. Drugs are part of my story. If you don't like it, read Bills and Bob's. They both did drugs too. You know, I started getting high when I was 12. I quit when I was 48. That's a long time, you know. However, for all y'all that are in here that are young, it doesn't really have to be like that. There's a lot of years there that I spent getting high that I really didn't need to. How many people in here have been to treatment? How many of y'all got a relapse prevention plan when you were in treatment? How many of y'all have ever looked at that? Okay, that's, you know, you got your relapse prevention plan. They talk about things like triggers and stuff like that. You know, on page 52 of the book, we have a thing called the agnostic promises. Having trouble with personal relationships, we couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery, depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of a uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be real help to other people. Those are my triggers, right? Life, right? You know, anything and everything that happens is a trigger, right? Whatever a trigger is. You know, and then you get that next part and it says, call three people before you relapse. Everybody remember that? Mine is the liquor store, the dope man, and the escort, right? Because I'm not calling my grandmom. And if I get to the point where I'm about to use, I'm not calling my sponsor as much as I love you, you know? Because by the time that obsession kicks in, I don't got a chance, right? The book tells me I have an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. Right, both of those are triggered by a spiritual malady. You know, I had the book says we're irritable, restless, and discontent until we take the first drink. I was irritable, restless, and discontent. I think my first noticing that was like 3 or 4. You know, step one, we admitted we were powerless. I was powerless over Drew. My life was unmanageable at about 6. When I was 5 and a half, I got in trouble in elementary school because I figured out this, I mean in kindergarten, because I figured out this great way to make a little extra money, right? There's a little fort out in the playground, and I would charge all the guys a nickel to look at my girlfriend's butt, right? I had it going on, you know? That's unmanageability at 5 and a half, right? You know? At 6, I burned the school woods down, right? At 6, I burned a house down almost. By the time I was 6, I'd gone to the fire department twice and had met Mr. Fire Marshal guy. And, you know, by the time I was 6 and a half, I had been pulled over on my big wheel. You know, life was unmanageable from the time I was a kid. You know, there was not like I grew into this alcoholism thing, right? Alcoholism, the ism, the addictionism, the ism is what the problem is. The spiritual malady is what my problem is. And I'll use anything to fill that spiritual malady, you know. I came at some point to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore me to sanity. You know, when I was 3, my mother would play piano. And this is the first time I ever remember having something similar to a buzz. And I would sit there and spin in circles till I was so dizzy I'd fall down. And everything was okay, right? Then I'd get back up again, and I'd spin in circles and spin in circles and spin in circles till I fell down. You know, I started getting high and drunk when I was 12. I immediately knew that I'd found a power that could restore me to sanity. You know, all of a sudden, life was all right. I could deal with life. I could deal with you. You know, I could go to the high school dance, and if I snuck outside and drank a little booze, I might maybe have enough guts to ask you to dance. Probably not, but I'd think about doing it a lot more, right? You know, I would drink and drug all I could, you know, because it restored me to sanity. I was insane from the get-go. I don't remember not having that problem. I remember step 3, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of my higher power at the time, as I understood. When I was 16 years old, I remember making a conscious decision that I was going to be wasted all day, every day. The decision was, what am I going to be wasted on? Well, if I drank alcohol in school, I usually got in trouble, generally for throwing up in the bathroom. So I quit doing that and started smoking pot during the days, drinking in the afternoons and evenings. Right? But I made a conscious decision to turn my will and my life over to a power greater than myself. And then I skipped steps 4 through 11 and jumped immediately into carrying the message. And I carried that message for years, man. You know, I had a solution for you. You know, I had a solution for you. We used to go to a lot of widespread panic shows, and we carried the solution to the widespread panic shows and the Grateful Dead shows. One of the ways we carried the message to a widespread panic shows is we would go buy a bunch of golden grain and a bunch of mason jars, and we'd pour the golden grain in the mason jars, and then we'd throw some fruit in there and shake it up and sell it for moonshine for $15 a pint, man. You know, we were carrying that message, right? That's my story, kind of. You know, it was all about the ease and comfort I got from getting high and drunk. It was all about getting away from Drew. Drew didn't deal with Drew well at all. You know, I was not happy with me. I was not comfortable in my own skin. I was not comfortable ever, right? So I ended up partying for a long time. I tried to do recovery 15 years ago. I took a brief stint in a rehab, and I went to a lot of meetings. And I went to a lot of meetings where I was told to go to a lot of meetings, you know, and I was told that if I just don't drink and go to meetings, my life would get better, right? Well, my alcoholic mind goes, if I can just not drink, I probably don't need a meeting, right? And so I stayed sober for a while, went to a halfway house, lived in a halfway house for a little bit. That was a really miserable experience, man. And as soon as I got out of there, I immediately started back to what I knew, right? Because I didn't have any accountability and I didn't have a program, right? I went to a lot of meetings. I called my sponsor every night and he would say, how you doing? And I'd say, I'm doing great. He goes, good, call me tomorrow. You know, I didn't realize that this thing existed, man. I had no idea that the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous existed. I had no idea that my job, if I wanted to get sober, was to go through these steps and have a spiritual awakening. You know, the whole concept of first of all, believing in a God that I couldn't see and couldn't touch, you know, was alien to me. You know, that idea just never even entered my mind, man. You know, I was about being able to see it, feel it, touch it. If it was there in front of me, I was okay with it, you know. So I stayed sober for 6 months, and then I went back out. I mean, within days, I was smoking weed, I was drinking, I was smoking crack and doing all that kind of stuff. And I did that for another 15 years, you know, and eventually I ended up on the substance that brought me to my knees, you know. And then I ended up getting pulled over and thrown in jail and all that good stuff. And the judge said, I got 12-step by the lovely Morgan County judge. And she said, you can do one of two things. You can stay here or you can go to treatment. Right? And I was like, oh, I'll go to treatment, you know. I went to treatment, man, and I had some of God's grace a couple times in treatment. The first time was when they offered me outpatient, and I said, nah. You know, I was going to stay in treatment. I wanted inpatient because at that point I could not trust myself to be with myself. I could not trust myself not to use, to drink, and drug. That was God's grace. I needed to be removed from myself long enough to get my head clear, you know. And that's not something I wanted to do. That was something that I was like, no, I need treatment. Did I just say that? You know, it was like that. It was the strangest experience. Also, when I was in treatment, you know, I ended up going to a lovely book study every Monday night that this group puts on at Ridgeview. You know, and there is this really cool chick there named Lindsay, who a lot of people know. And they kept telling me before I ever started doing any steps, they kept saying, you've got to find a power greater than yourself, right? And, you know, I can spend hours telling you stories about how I partied, but I'm pretty sure everybody in here has stories about how they partied. You know, on page 29, it says, the personal stories describe in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established a relationship with God. Okay? I don't think I need to tell you how I established a relationship with drugs. Everybody in here has their own story. Really, what I think I need to try to do here is give you all some hope that even somebody who partied as long and as hard and as screwed up as I did can get sober. If I can do it, man, anybody can do it. So I'm in there and I'm looking for God all over the place, you know, and for me, God's something that you can touch, right? Something I can see, something I can feel, something I can have some sort of, like, it's there. So I'm literally looking at trees. Well, maybe, you know, I'm kind of an old hippie. Maybe a tree will be a good thing to be a God. No, maybe the sun, you know, I mean, I had no idea. And Lindsay comes up to me and she taps me on the chest. And she says, your God's in there. And it was like the strangest concept. Right? All of a sudden, all these walls, it literally felt like I was walking from underneath a burqa, for lack of a better way to put it, into the light. It was like, boom. And the guy sitting next to me looked at me and goes, what just happened to you? And I'm like, I don't know. I think this God thing just happened to me, right? And from that point on, I knew that there was a solution. I had a spiritual experience. I did not have a spiritual awakening. Had I not continued to work these steps and continued to do the work that was put in front of me, you know, I'd probably be using again, because a spiritual experience is not going to keep me sober. It's going to go away. Eventually, it's going to go away, right? So I have to continue the work. You know, I say this a lot, but spirituality is kind of like running up a down escalator. If I stop running up, I go right back to the bottom, right? I have to keep moving forward, right? So I went through the steps the first time with my first sponsor, and we did it sort of old school style. I admitted I was powerless. My life had become unmanageable, and we did it as we read through the book. We didn't do any work on it, didn't do any writing on it or anything like that. It was pretty obvious to me my life was unmanageable. You know, I owned a business and spent most of my time sitting in my living room nodding out watching old black and white TV shows and movies, because anything that was in color was too real, right? I couldn't even deal with color TV. I had to have everything in black and white, so it was that far removed from my reality, you know? And that day in treatment, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. The concept of sanity, I mean, I don't ever remember even thinking that sanity was a desirable aspect of life. it was a part of life that seemed to me to be what people did when they weren't interesting enough to be crazy, right? Being restored to something that I never really wanted to be in the first place was an interesting concept. You know what I mean? However, I found out, thanks to my friend Chrissy here, that I'm just as shot out as I ever was, sober or not. You know, I'm just not as a pain in the ass to be around, and I have some conscious contact with the power greater than myself. So I came to believe that I could be restored to sanity, and then I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as we understood Him. And I've been taught that I'm making a decision. When I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, I'm just making a decision to work the next steps, right? It's not, I don't have to say right then and there, God, I'm yours. I have to say, God, I'm willing to do the work, right? And that was cool for me because I wasn't quite ready on step three to go, God, I'm all yours. However, at that point, I started reading the third step prayer. And I'm going to read that right now because it's really cool. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. That's a cool place to be. You know, that's something to work for. That's something to be able to be willing to work for. Right? So I was like, all right, I can do that. Then I sat down and did Joe and Charlie style step work, you know, where you have the columns and you do the check marks. And I had an interesting experience with that. I had ridiculous amount of harms, a ridiculous like 300 something harms, 300 something resentments and all sorts of fears. I mean, if I met you, I probably harmed you. You know, that's kind of the way it rolled out. So, you know, and I was looking at this huge amends list and started making amends. Step five, I sat down and admitted to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of, and to God, the exact nature of my wrongs. You know, and the reason I had to do that is because when it says, what is your part in it? My part in it was I did not realize they were spiritually sick. My sponsor goes, no, you're an asshole. You know? You know, maybe you got a point there, right? Six and seven, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. My defects of character is what protected my ass when I was running the streets. You know, my defects of character is what got me what I wanted. A little bit of manipulation here, a little bit of lying here, a little bit of fudging things here. Maybe I took a little money out of one bank account and put it in the other so the wife didn't know, kind of thing, right? Those things were the things that kept me going when I was on the street. So giving those up was scary, right? Because I didn't know what was going to come back in their place, you know? I didn't know what I was going to have left. Was there going to be any Drew left, right? Because all Drew was character defects at the time, one right after the other, you know? Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Well, I tried. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I made this long-ass list of amends, and I started making amends. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. The amends is the coolest thing I've ever done in my life. You know, one of the amends I made, I was not on my list. I was doing some expo thing for what I do, and this girl walked by, and I used to be a CASA, which is a court-appointed special advocate for child abuse and neglect cases, while I'm running around shooting dope. You know, I'm trying to help people because I needed to do something to feel better about myself and to balance the books, right? And so I couldn't be a CASA anymore because I had charges all up on my ass. And so I saw this woman, and I was like, you know, man, I think I owe you an amends. She goes, oh, step nine? I'm like, oh, shit. And it turns out she'd been in Al-Anon for like 8-9 years. And I explained to her what had happened. I made my amends to her. And she looks at me and she goes, you know, we're starting a family dependency court in Clark County. And the judge still likes you. Maybe you could work with that. You got charges on you, but maybe you could be a volunteer. I'm like, I'd love to. So she set up a meeting with me and the judge. And for the last 7-8 months, I've been helping develop a family dependency court and have been allowed to do it in a way that people actually have to have sponsors, work steps, and go to meetings. And so on some level, through God's grace, I've been able to be in a position to offer help to people that actually need it, where everything they end up with isn't punitive. Don't drink, go to meetings. I can't not drink, go to meetings, go to jail. Come back out, don't drink, go to meetings. I can't not drink, you know? And that's what drug court always seemed to me, right? So this drug court, if you get caught getting wasted before you started step work and have gotten a sponsor, you have to write a letter about what how it's affecting your kids, you know? So it's actually being of some value in my mind, and I was completely lucky to be put in a place, by the grace of God, to be put in a place to be able to do that. You know, people like me with charges in two different counties don't get to do that, right? That's not what happens to people like me. People like me end up going to jail, you know? Made another amends to a very good friend of mine, and I was like, you know, I'm sorry when we dated I was so crazy, and I'm sorry that I treated you bad, and I'm sorry, and is there anything else you'd like to say about it? And she looked at me dead in the eye, and she goes, yeah, I really wish you hadn't turned me on to crack, you know? And it's like, yeah, well, there is that, you know? you know? So the amends, you know, they're not really just for me, right? They're for the people that I've harmed so that they can get clear of the things that I've done to them. Right? Other amends. I made an amends to my wife and she cried. You know, that sucked. But it was worth it. I deserved it. I would have cried if I was her too. You know, and it was a good cry. Right? It wasn't a bad cry. You know, I'm just a guy. I don't like it when people cry. So I'm working on that. So. Step 10, you know, my sponsor had me start reading pages 84 through 88 the minute I got into the book. I'm going to be too early. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. You know, page 84, and one of the coolest things in the book was on page 84, and it says, love and tolerance of others is our code. That was not how I lived. You know, I did not live in love and tolerance. I lived in resentment, anger, and how can I get even with you if you've done something wrong to me? You know, so love and tolerance is our code is a pretty cool thing. That's a great way to live. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Here's the tricky part. Praying only for knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. Right? Do I get to pray for a pony, Richard? No pony. No. I don't get to get a pony, right? I get to pray for the knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out. That's a really heavy thing because the book says God either is or he isn't. He's either everything or he's nothing. So why should I pray for anything but God's will anyways? Because that's what's going to happen, right? I got no choice in it. I got no power, right? So I've been working on that, started meditating. And then having had... At this time, this was the first time through the steps, and the reason I'm doing this is because we're going to go through this twice in case you miss something. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all my affairs. I started sponsoring people. I started working with other people. I started doing the best I could with the spiritual experience that I had at that time, right? And I tried to practice these principles in all my affairs. Now, did that work? No. Why? Because life is still unmanageable, especially without my alcohol and my drugs. Right? So the unmanageability of life started riding all over me. You know, I thought everything was groovy for a while, and then some things happened, and it was like, man, you are completely screwed up. You are not living by the principles that you're supposed to. You have some serious spiritual maladies going on. You've just removed the alcohol and the drugs, right? And so something was missing. at that point, I needed a different experience, and I needed to go through the steps again with somebody else. And that's when I went and asked Tarek to take me through the steps. All right, back to step one. I sit down with Tarek, first time, my sponsor. I sit down with them, and I'm used to, let's read the book, go through the book, do the stuff, blah, 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 the way it is. And, you know, and that's great. That works. But I sit down with Tarek, and he looks me dead in the eye, and he goes, so, where are you not telling the truth? Where are you lying? Where are you being dishonest? Where are you agnostic, and where are you not trusting God? And I was like, well, that would be just about everywhere in my life. Thank you very much. You know, suddenly, step one, step two became a very different experience for me, right? Step one became about finding out what my truth is. Not just my truth as whether I have a drug and alcohol problem, but what my truth is in my unmanageability. And why, you know, I don't trust God. Why I don't believe that God either is and God isn't. God is everything, God is nothing. Why I have a hard time and live in the delusion that I actually have some sort of power. Right? Because that's what that is. And I'm just, from my experience, you know, anytime I think I have some power, anytime I say to myself, I got this, I'm so far away from God, it's ridiculous. Right? And so I sat down and we started going through step one, you know, and I started going through the book and looking at some of the things in step one, you know. Then we got to step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That took on a whole different meaning for me this time around. You know, sanity, the first time I did went through the steps, sanity was about removing the alcohol. It was about removing what it was that was causing me problems, causing me consequences, right? Suddenly, sanity became about living life in a sane way. Right? Practicing the principles in all my affairs. Actually doing the deal, not just talking about it and acting like it and paying lip service to it, but actually doing the deal. Coming to understand that God either is or isn't. He is either everything or he is nothing. And either choice is fine, but it's either one or the other. Right? So then I came to step three and made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as we understood him. At this point, I was actually willing to make that decision and do that. Do I live there all the time? Oh, hell no. You know, I'm not there all the time. But the decision is real. The concept of trying to live in God's grace as much as I'm capable is a completely different experience than the first time I went through the steps. Now it's a real deal. It's something that I actually want to be part of my life. You know. Then I made a searching and fearless and moral inventory of myself. This time was way different, man. You know, I didn't go through the sheet, which works, and put check marks under pride and all these things. My sponsor had me go through there, and when I had an amends or a resentment or a harm or a fear, I wrote about it, like the book says. You know, I wrote how it affected my pride. I wrote how it affected my self-esteem. I wrote how it affected me, right? And through that writing, I came to a lot of truths about myself. And the biggest truth I came to is that I'm basically full of shit. You know, I live in complete and total delusions of what I think, how you should treat me, how I should be treated. How I should treat you is completely different than how you should treat me, because I'm special and you're just not, you know. So I came to these truths about myself that I didn't like. And then as I go through there, I'm like, you know, where am I in this? And really, I'm in all of it, right? Because then I go to the third, fourth column, and I look at the dishonesty, the fear, the dishonesty, the selfishness, and the self-centeredness. And it all wraps up in fear with me, man. I got two choices in life. I can either live in love or I can live in fear. That's it. And all my character defects come out of my fear. I'm afraid I'm not going to get something I want. I'm afraid you're going to get something I got, right? It's all about the fear. You know, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to stay sober. Shit, I'm afraid I might stay sober. You know, I'm afraid you're not going to like me. I'm afraid you might like me. Because if you like me, then you're going to want something from me. Then I'm going to be afraid of what that is. Right? So my choices are, do I live in fear or do I live in love? And if I live in love, love is unconditional. Right? If God is love and love is a verb, maybe God's a verb. Maybe God's an action. Right? And if God's an action, you know, then the book where it says faith without work is dead, it's a program of action. Well, maybe the action is what we do to get close to God, right? Just a thought. You know, so I went through the inventory. And I did the resentments, my fears, my harms, sorry. And I sat down with Tarek and he goes, you know what I want you to do now? I want you to go through there and pull the principles that you live by out of that inventory. And I want you to take those principles and look at those principles and look at them really hard and write about those principles and inventory those principles. All right, so I go through and I start pulling these principles out. One of them is I should be able to behave any way I want. My wife should treat me good anyways because I'm that damn special, right? You know, another one is, and this is embarrassing, but one of the delusions that I lived in is that I need to be cool. I don't even know what that word means, man. I couldn't write a definition of the word cool if you made me. However, I have spent years of my life wrapped up in the delusion that I need to be something that I don't even know what is. You know, how am I supposed to live in an honest life? How am I supposed to live honestly if I can't even be honest about who I am and where I'm trying to be? Right? So I'm living in this delusion of being cool. And I have no idea what that word means. You know, I had this great idea that I didn't care what anybody thought because I spent so long in my life running hard and doing what I wanted and right? And it didn't matter what anybody cared or wanted out of me because I was going to do what I want. Man, I'm so wrapped up in what you think and in what you think and in what you think. It matters so much to me that you like me. And I hate that, but it's real. You know, it's really who I am, right? You know, these principles is where the truth came out, man. The principles is where the truth came out. You know, I can write about you all day long, and I can always have a piece of me going, it's still you, right? I can write about being mad at this or upset with this or I've harmed that. The only way I'm going to get to the truth of that is to go in there and dig out the principles that cause me to live in the delusion that allows me to behave that way to you. Right? That's the only way I can get to my truths. So I went through and I did the principle inventory with my sponsor. And then I went through the fifth step and I admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And again, a lot of the time it was, no, Drew, you're an asshole, but you know, you're delusional, you know. And then I did the fifth step with somebody else, right? Because the book says with a person or persons. So if I'm truly looking for my truth and I'm delusional and can't see myself honestly, maybe the best way to find that truth is to get a couple people's opinions instead of just my own, right? So I went through the fifth step mostly with somebody else, we're still going through it, and came to some more truths about myself, you know? I'm an arrogant, ego-driven SOB. And the only thing that keeps me from that is some sort of conscious contact with my higher power. You know, left to my own devices, I'm probably going to screw you over. You know, that's just kind of the way I roll. You know, I may not mean to, and I'll probably, by the time I'm done with it, I'll have you thinking I did you a favor as I screwed you over. You know, I mean, one story I remember, I was trying to get sober, and I went to an addictionologist. Now, this is a person who specializes in addiction and is an AA. And by the time I'd walked out of my third visit, he was writing me scripts to OxyContin. You know, I mean, I'll hustle you, you know, because I'm living in delusion. And in some way, I made that seem like that made sense to me and to him. It seemed like a good idea, right? Step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I went home and I stayed quiet for an hour. And then my sponsor had me do step 6. And he had me sit on step 7 for a second. till I was ready to do it. I didn't jump right into it because asking God to remove my defects of character, my shortcomings, that's not something that I can do without giving it some contemplation. You know, these are things that have been protecting me and that I have owned for years. These are my defense mechanisms, right? So I sat down and I finally was driving home one night and it was like, you know, I'm ready, man. So I pulled over to the side of the road and I said the seventh step prayer, which you will get to listen to too. If I can find it. What page is seventh step prayer on? Thank you. Seventh step prayer. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Wow. You know, that's cool. And God, take it away. It's yours. I don't want it anymore. It's not serving me anymore. You know? Step 8, made a list of persons that we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Well, I still had a big old list from before, so I just kind of added on to it and made a lot of those amends first. And but the amends are different now for some reason. You know, they're not just, I'm not just making them because I know I did something wrong. I'm making these amends because I know why I did something wrong. I understand the delusion that I was living in that caused me to behave in the way that I behaved to do you harm, right? That's different than just knowing I did you harm. There's a big difference between knowing I did something wrong and understanding why I did something wrong. One of them is a lot easier for me personally to grow from, right? Step 9, made the amends. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. That has a whole new meaning for me today. You know, it's not just about, sorry I cussed you out. It's like, man, why am I doing this? You know, why am I talking to these people this way? I'm in a delusion, and I'm stepping away from my higher power, right? And that's my ego, because the ego rebuilds, man. And that's why it's important for me and in the people that I seem to work around and feel comfortable with to go through the steps more than once, right? And hell, I went through the steps once in my first year of sobriety. I barely could spell my name most of the time I was doing the work. I wasn't clear-headed enough to get any kind of truth. You know, I have to go back through this thing and then the ego rebuilds, and I have to go back through this thing and then the ego rebuilds, and I have to go back through this thing and then the ego rebuilds. And that's just the way my life is, you know. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will and the power to carry that. And I still can't pray for a pony, you know. But this is different now. You know, meditation is actually a real thing for me, trying to allow God into my life. Somebody said something to me, and I'm sure everybody in this room has heard it, but you know, everybody in here's got a friend that just never shuts up, right? God doesn't want a friend like that. Shut the hell up and meditate. Let Him talk to you, you know? I mean, let Him talk to you, right? So through prayer and meditation, knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Not as a result of some steps or a few steps or the steps that were comfortable, but of these steps. I try to carry this message to other alcoholics, which is why, as shy and insecure as I am, I'm standing up here right now, and to practice these principles in all my affairs, right? That's the part sometimes I think we forget. You know, all my affairs means all my affairs. It doesn't mean when I'm sitting in a meeting. You know, it doesn't mean that I go to an AA meeting and look around and go, oh, where's the hot chicks? You know, it means I practice these principles in all my affairs. I treat women the way I would treat my sister or my mother, right? I treat my friends the way I would treat my family. You know, it's not about just going to meetings and talking a bunch of crap while you're there and then going out and being a hood. You know, that's not what it's about, man. You know, so what's it like now? The psychic change, if this is where I was starting on this, whatever this is, podium, and this is where I might possibly be, call it nirvana, right? I'm maybe there, maybe on a good day. And the difference is freaking light and day. If I get to spend the rest of my life working towards that, God, how lucky is that, man? You know, we have a chapter to the agnostics, not knowing, right? Thank God I don't know. If I knew, why would I need to continue this work, right? The greatest thing in the world is I do not know and do not comprehend my higher power. And the minute that I think I do, I'm screwed. The minute that I think I know God and I've got God and God in me and I understand everything there is to know about God, I'll probably be drunk in a week, man. Because, you know, as I think Einstein says, you know, for us to try to understand God is to belittle his existence, right? How can I, as a human, try to explain, understand, comprehend, and tie into something that's that great, that powerful, that amazing, right? If I got a God that I get and understand completely, probably don't need that guy as my God, you know? Hence comes the set-aside prayer, right? Because if I start thinking I know what's going on, I might need to set that aside to have a new experience, right? Because the old experience, how many people in here have been tried to get sober more than once? How many people prayed to get sober more than once? How those prayers work for you? Maybe we need to set aside that concept of God and see if we can find a bigger one, right? One that'll actually keep you sober. One that'll actually keep me sober. One that'll actually keep me looking for my higher power. Keep me searching for a better conscious contact with my higher power. Thank you all. Have a good night.